And now, meet the press. Today's guest, George W. Ball, newly appointed Undersecretary of State, second in command of the State Department. Our panel consists of Roscoe Drummond, New York Herald Tribune, Vermont Royster, Wall Street Journal, Robert McCormick, NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak. Ned Brooks will moderate the program. And in a moment, we will have our moderator.
This is Ned Brooks inviting you to Meet the Press. Our guest today is the new Undersecretary of State, Mr. George W. Ball. With Mr. Dean Rusk absent from the country, Mr. Ball is the acting Secretary of State. He has long been recognized as one of the country's best informed men on the European common market and our reciprocal trade program, which promises to produce one of the major battles in the coming session of Congress. And now here is the first question from Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. Secretary, as you know, there has been a great deal of excitement in the last few hours on the Congo. Stura Linen, the U.N. top civilian aide in the Congo, said today, or is quoted as saying, that the object of the U.N. is to crush Chamba. That has been denied by Mr. Utant, and your office has just issued this statement, which I think has been released at 6 o'clock, in which you say we are backing the U.N.'s peacemaking task in the Congo as the only apparent road to a successful, peaceful settlement there. Now, isn't that double talk when there's shooting going on in the Congo?
No, Mr. Spivak, that isn't double talk. It's perfectly clear that the objective of the United States, the objective of the United Nations, is to bring about conditions of stable peace in the Congo. But we're persuaded that a stable peace can only be brought about when there has been a peaceful reintegration of the Katanga into the Congo. And this, in turn, can best be achieved by a negotiation between Mr. Chambé and Mr. Adula, the head of the Congo state. Now, in the last few days, there has been military action in the Congo, which resulted from a series of actions by the Katanga armed forces against the United Nations forces. And the United Nations forces, in order to defend its own freedom of action and in order to bring about the conditions under which a peaceful negotiation could be undertaken, has had to engage in some military actions of a highly limited kind for this highly limited objective.
Well, Mr. Secretary, do you think it's possible to shoot Mr. Chamba into conciliation? Do you think that you're going to be able to conciliate with a man after you have shot up his territory?
That isn't the objective. We're not trying to shoot up his territory.
No, I'm talking about conciliation. You're trying to get conciliation from him, but I think, are you going to be able to get it in that manner?
Mr. Chambé has been in a position where a great many outside influences have been at work in the Katanga. There have been a number of mercenaries. What the United Nations has attempted to do is to stop the military buildup in the Katanga, to stop the employment of the mercenaries, to create the conditions under which it becomes clear to Mr. Chambé that a negotiation is the best course leading toward a reintegration of the Katanga in the Congo. Now, this doesn't mean at all an elimination of Mr. Chambé. It means that he would take a position within the Congo state as a head of a part of that state, in effect a province or unit of the state, but under the overriding authority of the Adula government in Leopoldville.
Well, we then, for our part, as I understand it, the United States is willing to conciliate, to negotiate with Mr. Chamba, to keep him in the Congo and to let him run Katanga.
Well, we're not
under the Federation.
No, we're not negotiating with Mr. Chamba. The The only effective negotiation is the negotiation between Mr. Shambay on the one hand and Prime Minister Abdullah on the other. And this, I think, will in time come to pass, because this is the only solution for the Congo, which in the long run can ensure a stable peace.
I don't quite understand this business about conciliation with Mr. Chamba. Now, what do we want him to do? What does the UN, which we support, want Mr. Chamba to do? Lay down his arms, negotiate with us, and if he's a good boy, remain in the Congo, or are we trying to get rid of him?
No, not to negotiate with us, Mr.
Chamba. No, I'm talking about the UN.
The only solution that can be really effective is ensuring long-range conditions of peace is for Mr. Shambay and Mr. Abdullah to negotiate. Mr. Abdullah is the legal head of the Congo, of which the Katanga is a part. Mr. Shambay does not have that kind of legality. He is simply, in effect, the head of a province of the Congo. We're hopeful that we feel it's essential that there be a discussion between Mr. Shambay and Mr. Abdullah under which the Katanga is brought into the Congo, which Mr. Shambay remains in the Katanga but remains subject to some kind of overriding authority from the government in Leopoldville as the head of a part of the total Congo state.
Now, we'll now continue the questions with Mr. Royster.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brooks. Mr. Secretary, I'm sure we'll be back on the Congo. I may have a question or two on that myself. But in the meantime, I'd like to turn to the subject Mr. Brooks mentioned in his opening remarks, which is our trade and economic problem. Now, the President has proposed a program of wide executive authority to reduce tariffs on American goods on a very broad scale. And you, of course, are one of the architects of that program. So my question is, what American economic problems, very specifically, do you expect to solve by lowering American tariffs?
Mr. Royster, what we're seeking to accomplish is to bring about a considerable expansion in United States exports and in the whole level of international trade. Now, we're persuaded that in this newly developing trading world, which is a very different from the one that we've known in the past, that we must be in position to work with our trading partners, and very particularly to work with the new European Common Market, which is emerging as a trading partner equal in size to ourselves. We must be in position to work with the European Common Market in bringing about the reduction in artificial barriers to trade.
Well, now, Mr. Secretary, you're a very skillful negotiator on the subject of expansion of trade, but now let us suppose that you removed all of the European tariffs. You succeeded in negotiating the point there are no tariffs to American goods entering into the European Common Market. Now, rather specifically, what goods do you think we could sell more of in Europe in competition with European industry, and how much more could we sell?
Well, we already sell, as you know, a great deal more in Europe than they sell in the United States. Our trade runs on the order of 2-1, our trade with them over their trade with us. In industrial goods, for example, it's 2-1, which is an area I know you're...
Well, do you think, for example, that American automobiles could go into the European market and compete price-wise with Volkswagen, Renault, or even with the European cars made in Europe by American
automakers? I think there'd be a very, very, an opportunity for a very considerably expanded market for United States automobiles in Europe. At the moment, as I recall, there is a tariff of about 29% on American cars going into Europe. This is a new external tariff which will be created under the Common Market Treaty. I think that if that tariff is substantially removed, which I think can be accomplished by negotiation if we have the authority to bargain properly, that there can be a very considerable market, a larger market for the United States.
Well, now, in connection with this lowering tariff, you remarked, I believe, that we have to be prepared to shift manpower away from industries which cannot compete with foreign industry. Now, I wonder, does this also apply to agriculture? In other words, are you going to have free trade down on the farm with foreign agricultural commodities coming in here as well as industrial?
No, I wouldn't expect to have a free trade on the farm. Agriculture has always been marked by a set of very special trading conditions. I would hope that we can have very liberal trade in agriculture, because I think that American agriculture is highly efficient and can compete in world markets with great efficiency. And I hope that with the proper powers given the President, we can work toward that objective.
Mr. Drummond.
Mr. Secretary, some spokesmen for the administration have suggested that the kind of relationship between the United States and the European common market ought to be a form of partnership. If that phrase is approximate, at least, what is your definition of what partnership means?
Well, I think that there has been a certain amount of ambiguity in the use of this phrase, Mr. Drummond. The situation in which we find ourselves now, as I said a moment ago, is faced with the emergence of this great new force in the world, this combined market, which has a very considerable political implications as well, because it means real unity among the European nations. Now, we're already working with these same European nations in defense matters through NATO. We're working in a whole wide range of economic matters through the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which just came into being. I think we want to expand that kind of activity, the consultation on domestic economic policies, to concert them and to prevent the kind of distortions and imbalances which can make economic life very difficult in a modern industrialized world.
Mr. Secretary, it's obvious that any appreciable change of our trade relationship with Western Europe will involve, with respect to some industries, some very considerable trade dislocations and serious difficulty. What does the administration have in mind, as concretely as possible, as a means of rather cushioning these dislocations?
Let me say, Mr. Drummond, that I think that the kind of dislocation to which you refer tend to be rather overstated and exaggerated. After all, American industry responds to changes all the time. It's capable of a great deal of adjustment and flexibility. This is a mark of an efficient and flexible and effective economy. And I think that for the most part, the changes are of the kind which American industry is used to accommodating itself to, for a wide variety of reasons, of which changes in trade patterns are only a small part. So I don't think that, for the most part, great assistance will be necessary. But as you know, President Kennedy, I think very wisely, has proposed, has announced that he's going to ask Congress for some measures which will enable the government to assist industry and assist labor through labor retraining, through the provision of low-interest loans to assist modernization, and so on. Quite a large, wide range of measures.
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Secretary, you spoke a few moments ago of outside influences at work on President Shombe. Where is he getting his money?
Well, of course, there is great mineral wealth in the Congo, mineral wealth in copper and in a whole series of minerals. And with the mines located there, they provide revenues for Katanga, which he in turn has available to him. And these are the revenues which are used, I suppose, to pay for the very high-powered information program which he's been running around the world in a kind of propaganda service. And these are the the monies which he's been using to try to buy arms, airplanes, and other kinds of weapons.
I didn't realize he controlled those minerals. I thought they were under foreign control.
Well, they're owned by companies which are doing business in the Congo, but which are subject to taxation for the benefit of the Katanga.
And you think he gets all the money he needs to wage this war from those sources?
Well, those are the sources of wealth which are available to him, yes.
Well, before the revolution broke out, though, if you can call it that, the rebellion, Katanga was a very poor province, and supposedly the local administrators were getting about the same share of the profits then, weren't they?
Well, the Katanga, from the point of view of the mineral resources that are located in it, is one of the... It and Kivu, I believe, were the two... Kasai are the two richest provinces of the Congo, and there's a great deal of wealth in the Congo.
Yes, but my point is Chombe getting more out of it now than the Katanganese got out of it before they became presumably independent?
Well, the revenues which are available to him are very substantial. Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Secretary, Ambassador Stevenson the other day said that the United States is very pleased with the plans of Secretary General Utant to bring Katanga under control. Can you give us any idea what those plans are?
Well, the plans are the plans which are provided for in the series of resolutions which have been adopted by the Security Council. And they call for the elimination of the mercenaries, for the creation of freedom of movement. At the moment, the Katanga has, government has been trying to impede the movement of people into the Katanga to stop the buildup of arms on behalf of the Katanga Army and Air Force, and to prevent the creation of conditions which are potentially extremely explosive, because with the of wealth available to the Katanga, if the Katanga goes ahead and freely purchases arms all over the world with an army which is a which has available to it mercenaries, freebooters who are rather itinerant gangsters, you can see the potential for danger.
Plans, I'm talking in terms of military plans. I mean, what increase of troops? What increase of planes?
Well, there's a substantial increase of troops in Elizabethville and the area around there, which have been moved down from Leopoldville. As a matter of fact, the United States has been assisting only to the extent of making some planes available to fly in arms and troops in the last few days to protect the force, to enable the U.N. forces to protect themselves.
Now, we've sent transport planes in. I believe we've sent about 21 transport planes in. Are we prepared, if necessary, to end this thing, to send bombers and other planes into
this
it?
Is a problem for the U.N. I think it
if they call us, if they call upon us. I wonder what U.S. policy is on this, how far the United States is prepared to go to put this thing to an end.
Well, I wouldn't want to anticipate U.S. policy. I wouldn't suppose such an eventuality is likely to occur. It seems to me very, very likely that the U.N. will get military control of the situation in Elizabethville in a very short time now.
Mr. Royster.
I have a question on this Congo situation, which was originally brought up by Mr. Spivak, and I'm not quite sure that I understand the answer. That is, if we go into Katanga, the United Nations forces, and let us suppose we do pacify the area, that would be the phrase, what sort of situation do you think would exist in the Congo, and particularly in Katanga, after we had performed such a pacification?
Well, pacification has a word with very bad overtones, as you know. I mean, what we're attempting to do is something, what the UN is attempting to do, is to accomplish a very limited objective, which is simply to bring about the conditions under which negotiations can proceed. Now, the Leopoldville government, under Mr. Adula, who was the duly elected prime minister, is a government of responsibility. Mr. Adula is a very responsible man. I think the one thing I should say is that we talk about Mr. Shombe. Some people talk about him being anti-communist. Mr. Adula is fully as non-communist and anti-communist as Mr. Shombe. And the only long-range peaceful solution for the Congo, as we envisage it, is for the Katanga to become a peaceful part of the Congo, which is what it legally must be.
Well, it originally began under the Belgians as a part of the Congo, but there seems to be a difference of opinion within the Congo itself amongst the common people.
There is what amounts to a secessionist movement. The numbers of people who are supporting Mr. Shombe in this movement are not very great. A great part of the Katanga, by far the greatest part of the Katanga, is really not sympathetic with Mr. Shombe and is in fact not joining him at all. But there are a limited number of people who are doing so. They're aided by foreign mercenaries. This is a not a situation which, if it persists over a long period of time, is conducive to peace in the Congo.
Mr. Drummond.
Mr. Secretary, there have been new developments which shed new light on the embittered controversy between Albania and the Soviet Union. And I assume that you're aware that the Albanian government issued a statement late this afternoon addressed to Moscow, bitterly anti-Soviet, describing the Soviet government as made up of N. Khrushchev and his group, and complaining harshly at the repressive measures which the Soviet Union took recently, cutting off virtually all trade and aid to Albania. How do you appraise the significance of this development?
Well, I think it indicates another rift of consequence in the communist bloc. And I think it indicates something else, which is what happens to a country which is as closely tied to the Soviet Union and which shows any signs of deviationism, because as described in the statement which you described, the message from the Tirana government, the Albanian government, to Moscow, the measures which were taken after the Bucharest conference in June of last year against Albania were most severe. And it should, I suppose, stand as a kind of warning to neutral governments all over the world that they cannot rely on the long-range good faith of the Soviet Union.
Do you think that this may mean that, like the breach between Tito and Stalin, that here is another country that is being dropped out or is withdrawing itself from the communist bloc or from the Soviet bloc?
It's certainly a breach between Albania and the Soviet Union, and I think it's evidence of another additional rift in this otherwise what appeared to be a monolithic structure.
Well, what do you think will be the attitude of the Chinese communists now?
Well, as you know, they have given support to the Albanian government, and this is the evidence of a very considerable amount of discontent and disagreement within the communist bloc.
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Secretary, under our laws and policies, will Albania now be eligible for foreign aid?
Well, we have no plans for that, Mr. McCormick.
You haven't got that far in figuring it out yet. More seriously, what effect do you think these latest developments in the Congo will have on the foreign minister's meeting, since it was already a matter of some debate between the allies?
Well, I would hope they would, and I would expect that they would have no serious effect on the foreign minister's meeting, which is primarily to discuss the problem of Berlin, as you know.
Well, how far, Mr. Secretary, does the UN carry its activities in the Congo in the way of pacification, or whatever other word you don't like we might use?
Well, as I say, the objective is a very, very limited one. They want to protect their own forces there and the freedom of movement of their own forces. That means removing roadblocks. It means preventing the kind of very excitable agitation which has been conducted through the radio by the Katanga government. It means getting control of the airports.
We have about 2.5 minutes, Mr. Spivak.
What do you think the effect of Mr. Leonard's statement is going to be on the British, who have never been, who've only been lukewarm about our action in the Congo anyhow? Isn't this going to be a stir up a great deal of problems for the
Allies? Well, I would hope that Secretary General Utant's statement in New York today, which is, after all, the definitive voice of the U.N. Secretariat, will give the British the kind of reassurance which they need.
May I ask you one question? We've had a lot of generalities about the consequences, both good and bad, of your proposed new foreign trade program. Has the administration any idea which industries will be hurt?
Well, I think the word hurt is not really a very
temporarily good hurt.
I think that there may be some temporary dislocations which may require some readjustments. But actually, these have been very greatly overstated, I think, Mr. Spivak.
Which industries?
I couldn't give you any particular industries because I don't know what may come out of a trade negotiation that might take place under new powers.
Mr. Royster.
Mr. Secretary, you recently stated that we reject the idea about protecting American industry against the competition, but suppose that this adjustment does require lower farm prices, if it means adjustment in wage costs in industry, if perchance it should mean fewer employees, fewer jobs on our American automobile assembly lines, do you think the country politically will accept that? Will the government accept the responsibility for that, politically speaking?
Well, I think myself, Mr. Royster, that a more liberal trade policy on the part of our government would open up job opportunities for Americans rather than to reduce them. I think that it would make industry much more healthy rather than impair its good health.
Mr. Drummond.
Mr. Secretary, I want to bring up a quick question about Berlin. Do you think the circumstances are now ripe for early negotiations with the Soviet Union on Berlin?
Well, this is a matter, as you know, which is being discussed in the foreign ministers' meeting and which will be discussed in the NATO conference. I think it would be not proper for me to venture an opinion on that at this point.
And at this point, gentlemen, we'll have to suspend our questions. And thank you very much, Mr. Secretary, for being with us.
Thank you, Ned Brooks. In just a moment, we'll tell you how you can get a copy of this week's Meet the Press discussion.
Ghana, Guinea, the Mali Republic, Nigeria, the Ivory Coast, the Congo Republic. These and other new African states now make up the largest single power bloc in the United Nations. This is Pauline Frederick noting that NBC News will help you become more familiar with these newly emerging African nations by putting you on the scene for important UN meetings and debates, by adding interpretation and background to the developments. The United Nations becomes more meaningful when you're tuned to NBC Radio.
Holiday time should be fun time everywhere in the world. On the island of Ceylon, off the coast of India, the people have a traditional celebration, as we do on Christmas Eve. Lanterns, torches, and huge bonfires light the darkness. Drums beat and fireworks go off. Against this weird background of lights, the famous candy dancers of Ceylon perform their ancient devil dance in grotesque masks with horns. This year, the people of Ceylon have another reason for celebration at holiday time. This year, more than 1.5 million of their children are stronger and healthier because of your generosity through CARE. That many children have had a meal every day in their schools because you've sent dollars to CARE, New York 16, New York. Your holiday dollars to CARE this season will help keep that program going. Won't you help these people with your generosity through CARE? That's CARE, New York 16, New York. Now more details on Meet the Press. Today's guest was George W. Ball, newly appointed Undersecretary of State, and the panel consisted of Roscoe Drummond of the New York Herald Tribune, Vermont Royster of the Wall Street Journal, Robert McCormick, NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak. For a printed copy of today's Meet the Press discussion, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, M-E-R-K-L-E, Merkle Press, 809 Channing Street, Northeast, Washington, D.C. The guest next week will be Mr. George Meany, president of the AFL-CIO. You're never out of tune with the world when you're in tune with Radio NBC.